And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Ah, Johnny Donovan, yes, indeed, it is that time to gather around the microphone here in Studio 17A. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is indeed here. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning. You probably wonder why I just...
I mean, through the door as the intro
was
rolling.
As the music
was
playing.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I just came, but you can't say that you've done this, but I just had breakfast with the Dalai Lama.
Did you?
I did.
I understand that the president is going to meet with the Dalai Lama
as well.
The president's
going to give him a congressional medal, I think, in Washington.
What does one speak with the Dalai Lama about?
It was actually fascinating. I had a breakfast at Gracie Mansion for leaders of the Buddhist community. We try to do it with different ethnic groups to make sure that everybody feels they're part of the city. And the Dalai Lama was going to be in town, and we arranged for him to come. I've met him before, and it was a surprise to everybody who was there. So after an hour of breakfast, I went outside, welcomed him when he drove up, and opened the door, and there he was, and everybody was very pleased to see him. He's actually quite a nice guy. His English is reasonably good. He was interested. We went around the table. There were people from Buddhists from China and Sri Lanka and Korea and Japan and a lot of American Buddhists as well. And we chit-chatted about his teaching and his traveling around the world.
What questions did he ask?
It was more about, you know, where do you come from? How many Buddhists are there here? There's probably in the United States estimates are something like 6,000 Buddhists, although somebody pointed out that a lot of people think of Buddhism not as a religion, but as a way of life. So if you look at the census forms where you check off, are you, a Muslim or a Jew or a Christian or whatever, a lot of people put down nothing. And that may very well be. Or you could be a Buddhist and be practice another a religion as well, mm-hmm. or another religion, depending on your definition. But they tend to be very pacifist. There's a problem in Burma, as you know, where the First Lady, Laura Bush, wrote a very strong editorial in the Wall Street Journal the other day demanding that they stop killing people there. Which I thought was very nice of her to speak out.
Did the Dalai Lama mention that? Did he speak to that?
We talked about it at the table before he arrived. Mm-hmm. But he's, when you wake up in the morning, you think you're going to meet one of the leaders of the world?
Hey, listen, when you're the mayor of the city of the world, the first city of the world, then you get to meet these kind of people.
I get a chance to meet you and George.
Absolutely.
And the Dalai Lama.
Yeah, throwing us in the same category as the Dalai Lama, George. That's like throwing us under the bus.
My mom is going to be real proud now.
Well, I will tell my mother when I call later on.
That's right.
He's about 82 years old, I'd guess, something like that.
Do you know if there's a successor? I mean, I don't know how those things work.
I gather a group of priests recognize this. In this case, if I remember reading his biography, when he was about 2 years old, he was born in 1935, I think, and when he was about 2 years old, the priest recognized that he was, God had made him the heir apparent, and so then they raised him, and that's the way their beliefs work. Yeah.
And then, isn't that interesting?
But it was actually fascinating, a very diverse group of people. There was a woman whose last name was O'Hara from California, who was a Buddhist, and we had Robert Thurman, who is a professor at Columbia and runs a lot of the religious studies there. And his daughter, you probably heard of, Uma Thurman.
I certainly have. We've seen her, too.
And he's got a son who was there at the breakfast. They run Tibetan House.
All right. To bring things back to Earth,
yes.
A little closer to home.
Earth, that's a good pun.
All right. Joe Torre. What do you think?
Another great leader.
What's your prediction here?
Well, Joe is a friend, and I think this guy's great, and I've always said he's one of the great managers. I think it's a big segue. One's a religious leader.
Oh, exactly. And I didn't mean to put him into the same
category. People treat sports, it is a religion for a lot of people. Look, I hope that Steinbrenner decides to keep him. It's a... You know, Steinbrenner owns the team. He can do what he wants. Joe can accept an offer if they make one or decide to go elsewhere or retire. I don't know anything about Joe's personal financial situation, but he's worked a long time and he probably could afford to retire. He and his wife spend a lot of time working on domestic violence. They have a foundation they set up. He was a victim, as I remember, of domestic violence and cares very much. And, you know, I cannot read the tea leaves. Anybody else, you know, I know that they will or will not. I don't know what Steinbrenn is going to do, but I'd love to see him come back. Willie Randolph's coming back. You know, and look, if the ball had bounced slightly left or slightly right, if the bat had been swung a tiniest fraction of an inch different, history would be different.
That's the beauty of sport.
That's exactly right. I mean, this is, you know, it isn't a religion. It's entertainment and it's competition. And those players try and the coaches try. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And you can't predict. And if you could predict, it wouldn't be interesting.
What do you say I take a break, bring it back to reality right here? We'll get to the business of the mayor of New York in New York City. We'll do it next at 77 WABC.
77 WABC.
As you know, before we finish up here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show, we'll be taking your questions. That telephone number, if you want to get the queue, 1-800-848-WABC. 1-800-848-WABC. We have talked before about Governor's Island, a great piece of real estate, what to do with it. I know that in the past, your foundation has funded medical research on malaria and things of that nature.
We talked about that. On Governor's Island, we put out these requests for proposals and got back fundamentally nothing or things that wouldn't work. Somebody wanted to build a gambling casino there. You and I and our grandchildren probably won't live long enough to see the state give us permission, even if we thought it was a good idea, which I'm not sure it is. But, you know, so forget about those kinds of things. Fundamentally, we've got no responses back. What is going on there is a high school going up, opening next year, called the Harbor School, actually funded by Bill and Melinda Gates. Who gave us the
on
money
Governor's
for
Island.
On Governor's Island.
More people, because nobody lives on Governor's Island.
Well, there's a firehouse there, full-time, and a few guards and that sort of thing. But there'll be a full-time school there, and thanks to the Gates Foundation, who've really been very helpful in the city, giving us a lot of money.
And staff will commute by ferry?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, you know, it's not a bad commute. Some people love it, you know. Some people like it, some don't. Don't go if you don't like it. But marine studies and that sort of thing. And we try these theme schools. Theme schools are important because you want to get the kids interested. You know, you can tell infant or young kids, sixth graders, what to do. You don't tell high school students what to do. You got to make them want to do it. And so these theme schools make them want to come. Whether they go into that occupation eventually or not, it's immaterial. It's a question of whether they learn and maybe go on to college. Anyways, one of the things that I thought about was there's a lot of old buildings, which you can't rip down, they're landmarked, and the question is, what do you do with them? And I, in my foundation, we've been toying with the idea for a while of trying to have a center someplace in the world, and I've considered a couple of cities, one city in the United States and another country, or two other countries, where you would have people come together and work on public health issues. There's no place like this anyplace in the world.
I don't think a lot of people know that you are very involved in the foundation, and you have been with Johns Hopkins and the like with health.
Well, the School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins has always been my great love.
Right.
And I, you know, funded a lot of malaria research. Actually, Gates has done a lot of malaria as well. He's worked on insecticide mosquito nets.
Doesn't it kill more people in the world than I think almost
anything else? Depends on the numbers. Everybody's got a different number, but a couple million people a year. And they've been doing it malaria has been killing people since Roman times. If you dig up Roman bones, they all had lead poisoning,
which
Nero was
crazy.
Yeah,
right.
And from the pipes and from the eating utensils and drinking glasses and that sort of thing. And they all had malaria. And malaria has been around for a long time. The only way the reason malaria is not an issue in Rome anymore is they drained the swamps, got rid of the mosquitoes, which carry malaria, or malaria virus grows in them. Anyways, one of the things occurred to me was if I was going to fund a big public health institute where people from around the world would come and there'd be, you know, you'd have a small staff and people would come and study for a while there or have conferences and try to pull together all of the big pharma and universities and all of these stuffs together. Maybe we could lease some of these buildings on Governor's Island and put that together. Now, that'd have to be a public process because I shouldn't just go and say, you know, Bloomberg's going to take it. But it would probably require $100 million in capital to fix up these old buildings and, you know, $20 or $30 million a year to run it. And the idea would be visiting scholars could come and study for a while. It's tranquil. They have these beautiful old buildings, which really, they're gorgeous, but they're not. Right. They don't fit anything else. I mean, that's the problem with a lot of this. For all the advantages Governor's Island has, whether it's beautiful views, yeah, but it's cold in the winter. It's separate so that there's great security, yeah, but in New York, you don't want to be separate. You want to be part of. And so finding exactly the right thing. And whether this will work or not, I don't know. I mean, I've talked.
This would be something that your foundation would fund?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not so sure we wouldn't be happy to have a little help from some others as well. But, yeah, it's something that I'm interested in public health stuff, and I think this really would make a big contribution. As I say, I've been thinking about it for a while, and there's a couple of other places, one in the United States and one or two outside the United States, where it probably would work as well. And maybe I would do it there, or maybe Governor's Island.
Is it the city council that would require approval?
Actually, the Governor's Island, the federal government sold it to us for a dollar. Us is the city and the state together. There is a public benefits corporation or whatever you call it, that board of directors, and they have a staff, and there's a director who's great who's trying to find things to do with it. Leslie's really worked very hard on this. But, there'd have to be some kind of a public process because you don't want anybody to say, oh, you just, it's not for me. I'm spending the money, and I'm not exactly going to teach there or research there or get any benefit of it. But I think the world needs a place to pull things together. It doesn't have it. And it doesn't have to be here, but New York is the greatest city in the world. New York is where the crossroads of the world. It might be a wonderful thing to do, and it would use part of Governor's Island and really put Governor's Island on the map and make it more attractive for other things. Other enterprises that want to go where there's, it gets visibility. So we'll see. But it would be a major commitment for the foundation. And I've just started to think seriously about whether it would fit here.
It could become a world-class medical research center of some sort down the road.
One of the things is that, you have medical schools and pharmaceutical companies that they have their own research labs. So you've got to find something where you're not stepping on other people's.
Or duplicating.
And something that pulls together where you'd have a conference on malaria, let's say, and there'd be papers presented and people from around the world would come and could actually stay there on the island in these old houses and use one of the buildings for dining rooms and meeting rooms and presentations. It would, and it's unique enough because it's in the middle of New York City that it just might work. Although the other two places, as I've said, three places that we've talked about doing it in, they want it very badly. We'll see.
All right. One of the things in your 2030 New York plan, New York City, was trees, that we needed more trees. I understand a program has been begun on that.
Who would have thought I would be with Bette Midler planting the Divine Miss M?
Dalai Lama.
And the Dalai Lama, right. I better be thrilled. One of our 127 things in the plan was to plant a million trees. There's the old story. I think it's an Arab saying, a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. If it's not Arab, I apologize. It's some group that said it many, many years ago. And a million trees starts with one. So we, Bette and I, watered a tree as the Parks Department planted it there. And we hope between $400 million in the Parks Department budget over the next X number of years and a couple hundred million dollars in private money, which we hope to raise, that we can add a million trees to New York, which is more trees, 40 times the number of trees in Central Park or something like that.
This is not just for something to look at.
Trees do a number of things. One, they clean the air. They literally clean the air. They filter all the dirt out of the air. So, number two, they help property values. Walk down a street with no trees and then walk down a street with trees, and you tell me which apartments and houses you think would sell for more and where the stores would be more busy. That ain't even close. So it's a very good investment. We're not going to finish all 127 things in Plan YC, but I'm adamant that with a possible exception of things we need state or federal approval, which I can't control, we'll try, we're going to get all these things going before we leave office. And we have 811 days, I think, but who's counting, left to go.
All right. Well, those are two wild initiatives that you put, the one of Governor's Island and the trees. I think that most people would, especially the trees, would probably never have gotten there. Who brought that to the table? Do you remember?
No, but it, you know, in the end, this whole thing was pulled together by Dan Doktoroff and his staff. Rit Agawam is the guy really running all of it. You know, planting trees. Other people do this. And what we try to do is to look around the world at other cities. And there are a number of cities that have focused on trees and say, well, you know, I think you've got to be very careful. There's not invented here syndrome that unfortunately too many people have. If somebody else got a good idea, bring it in. If somebody's got a better idea than what we're doing, change. What's it, that press writes failure. I write success. You found something even better. Isn't that wonderful?
Stick around. Mayor Michael Bloomberg will continue with us here at 77 WABC. Let's get a news update. We'll look at business real fast. We continue, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, and you here at 77 WABC. Couple of things with education in the next couple of minutes here. First of all, the noose situation in Colombia, obviously a horrific, apparently racial event. But Colombia, at least in the papers, reported not cooperating with the police?
You know, I don't know what the actual facts are. I know what you read in the paper. What it said in the paper, one of the papers, was that the police in, right, number one, we take all these things very seriously in the hate crimes unit. Who knows whether what it really was, the noose they clearly found there.
Right.
And so we'll see whether it's a hate crime, depending on what the law reads, and they'll do the investigation.
And what the tape show.
One of the things the cops right away asked for would be security camera tapes, because maybe you could see somebody actually putting it on. According to the paper, Columbia, actually it was the teachers' college, that said, we want you to get a subpoena because we're afraid to turn over the tapes. We may be sued for violating somebody's privacy rights. Now, I believe the law could be crazy enough where they actually could be sued and lose. On the other hand, you would think they would rush to turn things over. I think who knows what happened. In the end, the police got a warrant, or whatever the legal term is, and Columbia turned over the tapes, and let's hope the tapes help them figure out what, when, who did what, and apprehend the person.
Supreme Court went in favor of Tom Freston, the millionaire who said that the city owed his child, learning disabled
child. Technically,
they
didn't even go in favor. Justice Kennedy recused himself because of a conflict. The other eight justices split four and four. So that means that the appellate court's decision stands. And the appellate court ruled that the city doesn't have the right to require you to send your kid first to public schools and let us see whether or not we have the programs that are appropriate for your kid if he has special needs. The court said that you can send your kid directly to private school, and if we don't like it, there's a process that we can go through. Although the kid's already in school, it'll take years to go through the process. You couldn't possibly win. Now, it doesn't change anything because the city's been doing that. That policy is the one that has been in effect. We were trying to change the policy to save a lot of money and to keep people from scamming the system. Whether this guy did or did not, I don't. That's
well. I think he returned the money. I don't. But that wasn't,
knows,
that wasn't his point.
That wasn't his point, right?
Right.
But the bottom line is there are people that scam the system, and we wanted to, before we paid for private schools, see whether or not we have the ability to provide what the child needs in the public school system. After all, you know, everybody says my kid's got special needs, and pretty soon every kid is going to Andover and Exeter, and the city goes bankrupt. You can't do that. But the court didn't, and we were surprised. Everybody, I think all of the legal experts listening to the questions the justices had, thought that we would
prevail,
and we didn't. And so we'll have to live with it.
It will probably cost the city more money.
It's costing the city more money now. So we've been doing it.
Right.
What we're missing is the savings that we would have gotten out of this, and we need the money. It's a lot of money. $57 million, I think, was an estimate or something.
Okay. And speaking of another judge's ruling, a judge has said that the gun shop in Georgia can indeed sue the city for $400 million. Obviously, we've talked about this, guns coming from other states into New York City end up illegal on the streets.
You know, you saw George Weber had a story of this kid in, was it Cleveland?
Yeah, Cleveland.
A 14-year-old shoots a bunch of people and then kills himself.
With a bedroom full of guns.
With a bedroom full of guns. What is it, you know, Virginia Tech, what does it take for people to stop this craziness and say, you know, we just shouldn't be selling guns to children, and we shouldn't be selling guns to mentally disturbed people, and we certainly shouldn't be selling guns to people with criminal records. That violates federal law. And we should give the police the information they need in order to enforce the law. Now, Congress passes a law that keeps the cops from having this information until after a murder takes place. Then they can go, oh, great, thank you very much. You know, so that's a typical Congress, congressional thing, you know, well, oh, we protected everybody. Yeah, after the murder, you protected the victim. Thank you, Brian. But the bottom line is that we have gone after those in other states that sell guns to people that bring them here, and they wind up on the streets of our city. And we have an obligation to protect the people in our city. I'm going from here downtown to a police memorial for another cop that's killed. And it's fascinating. You should see there's this wall in Battery Park City with the name and the date of every police officer killed in the line of duty. And if you go back to the 70s, there was one every 2 weeks.
Mm.
Today, thank God, it is rarer, but still a couple every year. And, you know, these are men and women who put their lives on the line. And not every time, but almost invariably, it is guns in the hands of people who have criminal records and shouldn't have them that do the murdering.
Congestion pricing, where does your plan stand? I've been reading the MTA has been talking about its cost and slash benefits.
Well, the MTA issued a report saying what we've been saying, that this city desperately needs more mass transit. There are parts of the city that are not served. There is mass transit that doesn't work as well or isn't as enjoyable or isn't as fast as you would like it to be, and that it's going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars. My attitude is, fine, thank you. Before they get a pay raise or anything else, that's what they should be doing. They have an obligation to provide exactly that. Now, one of the ways to get that would be to have congestion pricing charges where the federal government would pay roughly half of what the estimates are. $350 million would be half of their $700 million estimate. And congestion pricing would generate a lot of the congestion pricing fees, which would be used to do exactly that. If we don't have congestion pricing, the challenge the MTA is going to have is how are they going to come up with the $700-odd million? And I can tell you, I and our representatives on the MTA board will be screaming bloody murder, because we need mass transit, and we need it to serve all parts of this city. That's the MTA's job, and it's a regional thing, but the city's part of the region. And for too long, we are devoting resources to just the same system we have. It doesn't get better, and we've got to increase security. We've got to make it more pleasurable. We've got to expand where it goes. And some of these things you can do, and if the federal government will pay half, and congestion pricing charges would do... And congestion pricing would do three things, really. It will generate fees. The fees would go to expand mass transit. It would reduce the number of cars coming into the city, which is good, because then you can get around better. And it would put more people on the buses and subways, and they pay fees.
Generate more revenue.
You know, you can't have it both ways. People say, oh, well, I don't want more congestion on mass transit. Look, we have 3 million people that come into the city every day. They're going to come in. Now, which way do you want them to come in? Drive their cars or take mass transit?
And of course, if you build a system out to hold the additional people, then you don't have the crowding, or at least the crowding
doesn't
get terribly
worse. It was fascinating.
In
London, every single one of the problems people have raised here, they address those problems. Like, what happens? Will people drive right up to the border and park there? No. People don't. They stay much further out and then try to get on mass transit earlier so they get a seat. And there aren't any spaces just across the border anyways. That was fascinating. The other day, somebody came up with another study saying if you increase parking meters. This is a study paid for by the garage owners. I love it. You know,
I've got that in my stack of stuff here.
It is true that if you raise parking fees, maybe some people wouldn't drive. It also would benefit the parking garage owners. So one of the things we should do is we would raise taxes on the parking garages. That would be the first thing before I'd ever consent to raising parking meter fees, so that people don't, you know, that would dissuade them. Unfortunately, that wouldn't give us the money for mass transit. See, you want to do both. You want to expand mass transit and get fewer cars. So people come up with a solution that say, well, there'll be fewer cars coming in. Yeah, that's great, but that's half of the problem. Where's the money come from for the other side?
Yeah, how's everybody else going to get in if they're not driving?
In the end, the great beneficiaries of congestion pricing are those people who right now take mass transit, which is 95% of the people from every community, because the money would be spent there. The people who live in the suburbs around New York, because there'd be a lot fewer cars on their roads coming in, so they benefit greatly. And those people that shop and go to the theater and school and get medical and, you know, everything in the city, because you'll be able to get around. Yet last night I came into the city. I was driving and it was teeming with rain.
Really, the weather was awful.
And I had to go down to 51st Street from 86th Street. It took half an hour. And I said, well, let's go over, and I'd hop on the subway. And then, you know, it'd go a block. And I'd say, well, we're in the car already, but I should have moved over and taken the subway. It was the only ways to get down. I would have done it in 10 minutes.
A lot of people are concerned with this congestion pricing, that the technology will, you know, be used against them in some way, that they'll be following them in some way.
You know, number one, no. There's plenty of, you can just pass a law to prevent that. London, once again, has dealt with that issue. So is Stockholm, so is Singapore. Number two, anybody that wants to, you know, once you put a license plate in the back of your car, anybody can take a picture and follow you. I mean, come on, that's a bridge we crossed long ago. But nobody has any interest in following you. Easy Pass does exactly that. You look at this line of people waiting to go across the bridges with they charge tolls, and there's no line for Easy Pass, and there are people that spend half an hour in line.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
Wendy, and I always look and go, what is wrong with
that? Maybe they don't want any record. Okay, number one, I've always thought that the whoever charges tolls, Triborough Bridge or whatever, they should be selling one ride Easy Passes away from where the bridge is. You don't pull everybody onto a bridge and then slow them down. Get some space 2 miles up the road where people can pull into a parking lot, buy a one pass, and then they get on the bridge and go zipping through. And you won't have all this congestion. It would take almost nothing to do that. No money to speak of.
And as I understand it, these new signs out on Long Island that are supposed to estimate how long it's going to take you to go from A to B, they're using Easy Pass.
Oh, yeah, sure. You have to have something to use. But
it's they could
photograph your license plate and do that. Or they could have cameras and track this, just that, have a camera point at the top of your car without any number and just follow you. That's what technology does. You can't, not going to slow that down.
I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to slow down here, take a break.
And then
fast.
We want to talk about the best thing, Mr. Softy.
Oh,
I've got a report
Softy.
For Eddie.
Well, you've taken care of business. I mean, you've come to the right place right here on a Friday. The mayor and 1-800-848-WABC is the telephone number. Your questions next. Each and every Friday with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, we open up the telephones, and it's your opportunity to ask the questions. And
Eddie called back on August 31st. Eddie, if you're still out there, and I'm sure you are, waiting for an answer, you were complaining about
a noisy Mr. Softy.
Yeah, and I said I had been at the Corrections Officers Benevolent Association golf tournament, and we heard a Mr. Softy truck a few blocks away, and it was annoying, I will say. Anyways, I am happy to report to Eddie. Now, he didn't cause this.
No, he just reported
it. Just reported it, and we have arrested somebody, or the NYPD has arrested somebody, for selling cocaine and marijuana out of a Mr. Softy truck, and it turns out it was in Whitestone, this guy. He, 27-year-old guy, but he was not only selling ice cream to kids, he was allegedly selling drugs to adults.
It's, you know, it's the old story. I mean, this is not a new story, but how about that?
They arrested him, 159th Street and 29th Avenue. He lives in Bayside. Charged with criminal sale of a controlled substance and criminal sale of marijuana.
Is he still selling ice cream?
He is not only not selling ice cream, he is going to probably go to jail. And he had a license to sell ice cream in our park system, and we have, or are in the process of, revoking his license. So, Eddie, I don't know if you can take credit for it, but you can have a smile on your face.
Absolutely.
And you shouldn't hear that Mr. Softy guy again.
Eddie, take credit for it. Go ahead. Let's go to the phones, Mr. Mayor. Barbara's going to be first on the block here. Barbara in New York City, you've got the mayor. Go. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
You're doing a great job, but there are areas that wake me up every morning. I live in Midtown on East 42nd Street, honking of the horns. That's what I wake up to, and they're supposed to be fined $350. There's no one there to find them to enforce the law. There are no honking signs. It is terrible, terrible gridlock as well.
All right, this is where 41st, 42nd, and what?
Yeah, on First Avenue, you know, the Con Edison side, and it's going to become much worse when that those buildings go up and all those cars will be there.
Okay, but is it through the underpass or above?
No, the traffic. What's happening is the traffic is flowing north on First Avenue. It's coming on 42nd Street, west to east, and then you have the traffic from the drive coming off going north. So you've got that three corners there that are causing tremendous gridlock and honking of horns.
Barbara, I am going from here, as I said before, to Police Department Memorial Service, and I will mention it to the commissioner of the police department. He'll be thrilled that you pointed this out to me.
And maybe we will
but
have
we'll
an
see if we can do something.
Maybe,
seriously.
Maybe in the future we will have an announcement for Barbara.
We will like we hopefully do that. And because Barbara, one of the things you should do if that happens is call 311. I don't know if you did or didn't. And if they didn't do anything, they should have. But I will mention it to the police commissioner. That is a particularly crowded spot. And you'd get a lot of protesters near the UN and supporters of people. So
see what we can do.
See what we can do.
Barbara, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Dave here in New York City. Dave, what's your question for Mayor Bloomberg?
Good morning, John. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
I'm dismayed and distressed to find out that the city of New York has no provision for handicapped parking in any of the five boroughs on the street.
That seems hard to believe.
I'm trying to think. We have done a lot of things for handicapped people. For example, if you take a look at virtually every corner in the city, and it's a program that took a long time to put together, you have ramps at the corner where you can take a wheelchair down. One of the things we do when we set the traffic lights is try to have enough time for somebody that can't walk very fast to get across. I'll take a look at it. I don't know. A lot of parking lots have, you know, a handicap symbol where they reserve some spaces. I don't know whether there are any parking spaces with parking meters reserved.
Stu just told me in my ear that you can't hear that you can park at parking meters with a handicapped identification without having to pay.
It doesn't do any good if there's no vacant spot.
Well, that's true.
I don't know why we're doing that. The issue is not the money. The issue is the availability. But the real problem, one of the problems people, for example, that don't want on Sundays to charge for parking at meters is that then you don't have any turnover. People park there all day long. The real problem with the parking meters is there isn't enough. And if you believe the parking garage owners, they think that we should raise the fees dramatically at every parking meter.
Okay, there you go, Dave. Thanks. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's see here. Where do you want to go?
Why don't we take Frank in Brooklyn?
Frank in Brooklyn, you've got the mayor's ear. Go, Frank.
Good morning. Good morning, John. Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor, first of all, I want to thank you so much for the rebate check. You'll never believe that it came in at the right time for me.
I got mine, too. Thank you.
Yes. And first of all, let me say I'm 71. And, Mr. Mayor, I wonder if you could help me with one other thing.
Well, I don't know, but I'm 65, and I hope to be 71 someday.
Okay. All right. Mr. Mayor, every year I get HEAP. That's the Home Energy Assistance Program. This year they sent me an application with the wrong birthday and the wrong Social Security number. And when I called up that office, they told me that the program was over already.
I don't know, but if you stay on, we will get your name and phone number,
okay,
and I will have somebody call you and let you know.
All right, Frank, I'm going to put you on hold here, and then somebody will be picking up and get back to you.
Sean in Queens?
All right. Is it Sean or Jean?
Hi, good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Gambling. How are you both today?
Good, thank you.
I have, as a matter of fact, I'm looking at your gorgeous picture on the cover of Bloomberg by Bloomberg with invaluable help from Matthew Winkler. I just wanted to tell you I bought that yesterday.
Well, yeah, thank you. some people think that I used Brad Pitt as a stand-in for that picture.
Not true.
Oh, you're adorable. Stop.
It's not true at all. I mean, I know people confuse the two of us all the time, and he finds it particularly annoying, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure.
Quickly, right to the question because we're almost out of time. Go.
Okay. Okay, I wanted to thank you for everything that you've done for us. I wish you could be our mayor for another 4 years. Thanks for...
What's the question? Because I really, we're out of time.
Okay, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but 311 really gave me a runaround last Friday. I know it's your baby and you're very proud of it, but it's not working.
Shouldn't have happened. Stay on. We'll get the name, your name and a number. We'll try to track it down and see what happened and fix it so that it doesn't happen to anybody else. I'm sorry it did for you. Because the real issue, I can't do anything about the past. I want to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Man,
so stay on.
Taking care of business.
Don't hang up on this woman.
Yep,
put her on hold.
She is on hold, and we'll put our conversation on hold till next week.
I better get going. Police Memorial Service, and see you next week.
Have a good week. Mayor Michael Bloomberg right here at 77 W.